following podcast is brought to you exclusively by the Rad Rob Radio Network. Welcome to RTW Rewind. Rad Rob will take you on a journey through time to relive some of the greatest moments, matches, and personalities from the sport of professional wrestling. Now, here's your host of the show, Rad Rob, Rob Francois.
Hey guys, welcome back to RTW Rewind. I am your host, Rad Rob, Rob Francois. I hope everybody is doing well all around the world. Thank you for being here. It is day one of Rad Mania 3. 7 days of shows leading up until this weekend's WrestleMania. I have two esteemed guests with me right now. First off, it is the one and only, the real RBV, super host of HMG, Rick Vickery. What's up, Rick?
I gotta tell you, I had to put today's the 2021 RBV aside, and I had to take that walk down memory lane. Back to, you know, when I was just a half pipe, when I was a true little warrior. Rad Rob, I am looking forward to this one. I gotta tell you, I'm just gonna come out of the gate with it there. This might irritate some people no end. To me, this is the greatest match in WrestleMania history, and it absolutely is my personal favorite.
Holy cow. That's pretty high praise, especially for all the matches that have followed. You might get some heat with that one.
We'll get into the semantics. I'll break it down and I'll let everybody know exactly why they're wrong.
Okay. I love it. I mean, it's all subjective, right? But, yeah, we'll, I'm looking forward to hearing your argument against, you know, things like Taker and Shawn and 20 from 25 and stuff like that. So we also have another guest with us. He is from the Turnbuckle Talk podcast. It is the one and only Carl. I'm going to butcher your last name. Carful?
Kellerfell.
I knew, you know, first day out, and I'm already screwing everything up. Carl, it's good to have you on the show, man. First time meeting you. I haven't listened to your show, I'll be honest. But RBV gives you the seal of approval, so I will definitely check that out. And everybody else should as well. We'll plug you at the end. But thanks for coming on, man. I appreciate you being here.
I appreciate being asked to come on. This is an absolute pleasure. I always love coming on, being able to talk professional wrestling with other people who actually know professional wrestling. Not, you know, any of these smart marks that are out there trying to pass off their podcasts as professional wrestling podcasts. No, it doesn't happen. I only go on with the best of the best people, and that's why I'm here today. So thank you for having me on the show.
Wow, that's not even deserved. I'm just a 45-year-old schmuck doing a wrestling podcast. But, hey, I appreciate the seal of approval from you as well. And it is refreshing to talk wrestling with people that actually know something about real wrestling and not, well, the stuff that you watch on TV nowadays. We're doing Warrior and Savage from WrestleMania 7 from Los Angeles. What's funny about this pay-per-view? It was originally booked as being from the Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum, where Vince McMahon said, over 100,000 people will be in attendance. And then they moved it to, well, the indoor arena, which was the, what was the name of the arena, Rick? Do you remember what they called it back then?
Cue in my notes here. I do have my attendance here as we're talking about this thing. You know, it's kind of funny. We come from six. We're, you know, at the Sky Dome, 67,000 plus. They're looking to only grow on that here. They put together really an incredible card here. And it was tremendous storytelling heading into this thing. But, yeah, you know, we get just over 16,000, and you are at the Los Angeles Memorial Sports Arena.
So it was the indoor venue. Now, I think the kayfabe reasoning back in the day was it was during the Iraqi war, the first war, and I think they were worried about people being outdoors and possibly being attacked or for whatever reason, but they moved it to the indoor arena. But if you listen to guys like Meltzer, Meltzer says it was done because they didn't sell enough tickets to fill out the outdoor coliseum. What say you, Carl? Did you hear anything about that back in the day?
Back in the day, I definitely did. Now, it wasn't kind of immediate, but it was about a year later that, yes, I did hear rumblings of not selling enough tickets, therefore having to go indoors. Which, I mean, smart move. If that's the reason why, make it look full as opposed to half-assed empty.
Yeah, I mean, Vince thinking he can get 100,000 people in is a pretty big task. I mean, I know he's coming off the success of WrestleMania 3, where they had supposedly 93,173 people, which is a number that I'll never, ever forget. It's been ingrained into my brain. But then you got 4 and 5 there at Trump Plaza, where they probably had maybe, I don't know, 15,000, 20,000, if you believe that. So, obviously, you said WrestleMania 6 was in the Sky Dome. That place was packed. Not sure if any of that was papered or not, but the building was full. So, Vince was pretty high on himself. I guess he thought, with the tensions of the Iraqi war, you know, going on, and Sergeant Slaughter playing the Iraqi sympathizer, that there was enough heat on him. And trust me, there was. I mean, he got death threats from people, according to him. But, Rick, do you really think Vince kind of oversold it? Or, you know, there's, why would he think he can get 100,000 people in for Hogan and Slaughter?
Well, you've got, as I said, you know, top to bottom, this was
inside
of itself. And you had this thing. This is a really, you know, back in those days, it isn't today where we're saying, you know, where we're really overanalyzing that undercard. You know, then it was really about that single main event. And here, you're fortunate enough, you've got really two selling points as the match that we're really going to break, you know, jump into. But then, yeah, you do have that hot button issue. You have got the immortal Hulk Hogan, the great American hero, going, you know, chasing the WWF World Heavyweight Championship, who is in the hands of that villainous traitor, the G.I. Joe himself, turned evil, Sergeant Slaughter. I mean, tremendous build. You're hoping around that hype. Hey, I do want, you know, we're talking about the actual attendance and, you know, potentials between moving arenas. I do want to put WWE over here. To that time, it was their largest pay-per-view audience as they got ahead and stepped up to the plate. And that was shown around the world to where anywhere that we had troops, and yeah, that was free of charge for them. So, I mean, that the audience there might not have been there in that arena, and we might not have like heard that noise, but around the globe, this event greatly felt.
And Vince was always, you know, great towards the troops, and he's always been an American patriot. Obviously, we know about the tribute to the troops shows that he still does to this day. And people, you know, people that are enlisted or think former enlisted are always invited to the shows for free or at a discount. I think they're actually invited for free, but Vince is always taking care of our troops. And he, even back in the day when he had Radio WWF that went around the world, that was a Jim Ross project that he spearheaded. But yeah, you're absolutely right about that, Rick. I think it was the first time he shot that out worldwide for our troops who were mostly in Iraq at that time. So a nice little piece of Americana, you know, when you're away in the desert. And, you know, I've heard stories of friends that were enlisted that were happy when, you know, us citizens used to send food over there, like even Kool-Aid, because they're drinking dirty, muddy water. And they're like, anything to make this more palpable, you know, more tolerable, you know. So by bringing WWE over there, that was a pretty big deal for them. And you got to give Vince credit for that. Carl, how old were you back in the day when this event took place?
Now you're putting me on the spot. I don't even know.
We're talking, what, 1991?
91.
So as you said, you're approaching 40 there. So you're just you're just kind of hitting that tween years.
Yeah. What's your wheelhouse? You know, for we all go back to a certain year. My wheelhouse is typically like 89 was my favorite year in wrestling. I was 12, 13 back then, and a lot of people are, you know, 92 was their year. What was in your wheelhouse back at this day?
Probably the year before, to be honest, because I mean it happened at Sky Dome. Yeah. I'm a Canadian. Right, and I mean,
I can tell by some of your pronunciations of words that you're a Canadian.
That's right,
I didn't want to bring it out, but you mentioned it. So,
hey, I was known as the extreme Canadian Carl Carafell when I actually worked, so I'm okay with anybody wanting to call me out for being a Canadian. Yeah, I mean, that event there, we're looking, happened at Sky Dome, and that was like huge for Canada. Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that was really kind of the push through, right? Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, starting then and then kind of continuing on till today.
Yeah. Rick, what about you, man? Like, what was your, what's one of your favorite years as a kid?
Well, you know, we're talking about that wheelhouse, man. I just remember being completely just consumed with all things professional wrestling. It is kind of that stereotypical answer, and it's the slam heard around the world WrestleMania 3 just had me completely enthralled, locked into pro wrestling. And really, from that point through 4, 5, 6 was an incredible moment as I was really coming into, you know, the Ultimate Warrior was my guy as a kid. There was no one. He was so larger, so larger in life. He was the greatest superstar, superhero. And to, you know, follow that year round to hear with the heat in this program and the showdown with Macho, man, it might have been at its peak right here. But then, you know, really also into WrestleMania 8 running high. I've got to say, probably at WrestleMania 9, I heading into that, I really started to decline. And I don't necessarily think, I know the product was kind of going downhill there.
Yeah.
But also, as I said, you know, we look at our ages. I've got to get over that hump. I discovered pussy.
Okay. That's fair. Yeah.
So wrestling took a little bit of a back seat. So I did tune out for a couple of years. I always stayed in touch, in tune with the product, what was going on. But it wasn't that every week I have to have my fix. Mm-hmm. I live it. I think about it. I have every, you know, T-shirt, collectible, figure, whatever the case might be. But I'm going to say, yeah, between 6 and 7 WrestleMania is where I was at my peak.
Yeah, I started in 88 when I discovered the AWA and I saw the Midnight Rockers and I'm like, wow, these guys are pretty cool. I'm like, what is this? And then I, you know, turn on WWF TV one weekend at a friend's house, and the Mega Powers were on the Brother Love Show. It was right before SummerSlam 88. So I saw that and I'm like, whoa, what is this? So from then on, I was pretty much a week-to-week watcher up until Hell in a Cell last year when I finally turned off the TV and said, I can't watch this
show anymore. Now, I will say, going back to our youth, I was very fortunate. I just kindly mentioned WWE program. I was very fortunate. I had two uncles that were really into professional wrestling. I mean, like one had a backyard federation. So I'd sit there and I was, wow, you know, like, you know, the ring attendant, you know, to get their stuff out of the way, or I'd referee, something like that.
Yeah.
Another uncle of mine, he was a tape trader. So I would get a lot of, you know, different shows from the territories. So I knew the difference very early. You had the outlandish, over-the-top cartoon world, comic book world of the WWE, and then you had this rugged, raw sports presentation from a lot of your NWA territories. Yeah. So I did recognize that difference, and I really appreciated it in different aspects. And it's real funny, you know, we're talking about here at WrestleMania 7, and this is when I am completely, completely into the Warrior. He is everything to me. But as I talked about, you know, I discovered girls very there shortly after. I quickly grow out of that, and my guy became Ric Flair, and to the reason to this day that I spell my name R-I-C.
That's funny. And, you know, I talked about this with Ben recently that, you know, Ric Flair was one of those heels. Like, WWE had, you know, their heels were pretty cut and dry, right? I mean, you had Andre, you had King Kong Bundy, you know, you had guys, you know, Ted DiBiase, guys like that, where you hated them. But WCW and NWA were kind of on a different level. People wanted to be Ric Flair. Like, even though Ric Flair is yelling to people saying, these shoes cost more than your house, and he's making fun of fat people in the front row, or, you know, I slept with your wife last night, but guys are like, hell yeah, they wanted to be him. They hated him, but they also kind of said, man, he's got the women, he's got the Rolex, he's got the limousines, the jets, all that. We want to be Ric Flair. He was, like, the first cool heel that you would see nowadays on TV. I still think his character from the 80s would still play very well today as one of those tweeners.
I don't know some of that PC culture, how extreme it is today.
True. That's a good point.
I don't know a lot of what the Nates was spitting on that hot mic would be.
That's fair. No, that's fair. Carl, were you a fan of Ric Flair growing up?
100%, yes.
Yeah, I think we all were.
My two favorites of all time, Ric Flair and Shawn Michaels. I mean, same here. Yeah, like, Ric
which is funny
because,
you know,
it.
Yeah, Ric was Shawn's idol too.
Yeah,
so,
right?
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. Ric Flair was everything. Everything that any guy wanted to be. And for those reasons that you just spoke about, he had the Rolex. He talked about the diamond wearing, the limousine riding, the jet flying, all the girls every night. 10 girls. Didn't matter. He had it all. And that's what every guy wanted, right?
And it's fun to woo as well. So.
Oh, yes.
There was always that as a kid. I loved to, you know, my neighbor and I would have a woo fest back and forth, just screaming woo on our porches at night. But my parents loved that. But in any event, I always get off topic here on the show. We are here to talk Savage and Warrior from WrestleMania 7. Let's break down the buildup of this a little bit. As you know, the Ultimate Warrior had won the WWF title from Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania 6 in the Sky Dome, and he was the champion heading until 1991, until he got to the Royal Rumble, and they decided they wanted Sergeant Slaughter to be the champion to get more heat on him, as if he didn't have enough heat already with his being an Iraqi sympathizer. Let's not, you know, might as well put the belt on him. Warrior fought Sergeant Slaughter at Royal Rumble 1991. We had interference from Savage's manager, Sherry Martel, Sensational Sherry. Did you expect that to happen at the time, Rick? Were you surprised that Macho and Sherry got involved in that program?
If you recall here a little bit, you know, just living inside at the circumstances at this red hot story here, this went back prior to the Royal Rumble. We had a Saturday night's main event where Macho Man here at this point, you know, he had spent some time. He had was relishing under the crown, but spent some time away from that world title picture and wanted to reinsert himself. So he went right after the Warrior, did it on the Saturday night's main event. So that really begins our build. We've got tension growing towards the Rumble. Now, before, you know, we get to that championship match itself where Slaughter would essentially, where it would be stolen from the Warrior, we had one magnificent promo segment there, where you had Mean Gene out there with the champ, and you remember Sherry coming out there. I mean, you talk about a transition from sex appeal from what we had seen from the other female wrestlers today. I mean, she came out there and was pretty much, I'll give you anything, baby. Fabulous.
Yeah.
She looked phenomenal. Remember, she went down to the knees, begging the Warrior, I'll give you anything.
Yeah, you can use your imagination of what would have happened there if people weren't around. So,
and you get that epic no, and then that triggers what we get to the championship match at the Rumble. Sherry comes out, starts to interfere, and then Savage, you know, his Warrior's kind of chasing Sherry off there. We're not watching that part. So he blindsides him. Remember, he hits him with that lighting rig. Warrior still back to the ring, fighting champion, the powers of the Warrior. He's going to pull through. This is the Warrior hulking up style right here. And then that's when Watch hit him with that scepter right between the eyes, smashes it over his head a little too much for him to come back from, and the Iraqi stole the WWF championship.
Actually, I do have that queued up, Rick, before the match at WrestleMania, so we will see a little bit of the build-up to that. But yeah, I completely forgot about that moment at the Saturday night's main event. That's why you get paid the big bucks here at HMG. That's why you are the host with the most, and I'm just a schmuck, just, you know, working my way through it. We have a run-in here.
Hey.
From the one and only.
Just like that bastard Macho Man running in and interfering in the Warriors moment.
That's right. John Paz, welcome to the show, brother. Good to see you.
Good to see you. How you guys doing?
We are doing well. This is now an all-star panel. These two schmucks were here with me before, but now that we have the one and only John Paz from the two-man power trip empire, it's now a star-studded affair. Thanks for being here, John.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Appreciate it. A pretty elite company to be in the...
I'm just kidding. Carl and... I'm just a schmuck here with the microphone, just, you know, working my way through it. You guys are the real stars of the show. But anyway, Paz, we're talking about Savage and Warrior from WrestleMania 7. What are your memories of that feud and that match growing up?
One of the best feuds. I just absolutely loved it. Two of the all-time bests. The guys that pretty much are made from the Hogan feud, if you think about it. I mean, obviously Savage is awesome anyway, Warrior is awesome anyway, but both feuded from Hogan. Hogan was like the guy on top. Those were the two guys, basically 1A and 1B, or the guys right underneath him that were fighting to get to that spot. They weren't going to quite get it. Maybe politics, and because of who Hogan was and how over he was, they were never going to get to that spot. So they were always kind of the second tier behind Hogan. But they're just two of the all-time best. Whenever you think of, like, pro wrestling, and everyone's like, oh, pro wrestling, and, like, even if I ask my father-in-law, like, oh, my God, who do you – like, because he never watched, really. But who do you remember from back in the day? Hogan, Warrior, Savage, Piper. I mean, those are the names you always kind of bring up. So the Savage Warrior feud was just epic to me. It was just so good, so well done. The emotion was real. People talk about like, oh, work rate, stuff like that. It's really not that important, although I would say that these two were just awesome together. And Savage's work rate's through the roof. He kind of brought Warrior up to his level. And any kind of big match Warrior was in, he usually had a good match, also because of the guys he's working with. But I just felt like these two had awesome chemistry together. I love that feud.
I absolutely agree with that. And Rick, self-admittedly here before you got on, said he was the biggest Warrior fan of all time. Right. Rick, let me pose this question to you, because John makes a good point. Warrior always had great dance partners with him, whether it be Rick Rude at WrestleMania 5 and SummerSlam 89, Hulk Hogan, obviously, at WrestleMania 6, Savage at WrestleMania 7. Those guys, you know, gave him the best matches of his career. Was it Warrior's ability, or was it the guy he was working with to shine him up and put him over?
Oh, I'm absolutely. I will not sit here and try to defend a work rate. And I'm
okay,
not gonna,
that's fair.
I'm not going to, you know, try to go against the grain. You know, the words have been spoken from, you know, the great Bobby Heenan and those that would say he might have been arguably the worst, you know, in ring worker there was. But we're talking about a heydays, the rock and, you know, the rock and wrestling, the last golden boom of professional wrestling. It's something that an art form that is lost today. Pro wrestling is not great because of move sets and spots. Mm-hmm. It is about characters, moments, and emotion. And it's about being able to pull that out of an individual. So when it came to someone like the Warrior, I'd be hard pressed, you know, to have anyone has ever matched that for me. And that's what he did for so many. That's what made him so incredible, was that energy. So he greatly overcompensated in that area, completely washed everything else under the bridge, because they saw what they had, that special uniqueness of what a WWF superstar was supposed to be then.
Rick brings up a good point there, Carl. Obviously, the presentation helped the Warrior, whether it be the frenetic music that, you know, as soon as that music hits, you know who's coming out, which right. you might not know nowadays. You know what I mean? Like, he had that theme that everyone...
No, you go to your feet.
Yeah, exactly. You erupt, almost like the Stone Cold Pop, you know, with the glass break. Like, that was kind of the Warrior same deal, right? So you have the music, you have obviously the face paint, the tassels, him running to the ring, getting blown up by the time he gets there, but nobody cared, shaking the ropes. I mean, to me, as a kid, and I'm sure this is exactly the reason why Rick was such a big fan, as a kid, you see that larger-than-life guy, you see that superhero persona. Who cares if he puts on a great match? He could just beat the shit out of somebody in 30 seconds and we wouldn't even care. A la the Honky Tonk Man or SummerSlam 88. But to me, like, as a kid, that was it. Like, him, Hogan, you know, guys like that, that were just, like, you know, superheroes, to be quite honest. Did you feel the same way as a kid?
You know what? I did. I was kind of... I'll be honest, I was a little more on the other side of the spectrum, though. Mm-hmm. I was more of like the I like Jake the Snake Roberts mm-hmm. type of, you know, I kind of fell more towards the heel side of things, but for the same reasons, though, mm-hmm. because the Warrior had all of that big, huge hype, excitement, everything going for him, and then Jake the Snake Roberts just was able to grip me and yeah. grab me and keep me there, just the same as Warrior did, just the same as Hogan did, you know, just the same as anybody in that time, really. I mean, we got to admit, during that time, that was probably the greatest, because everybody had that gimmick that they had, that yeah. they carried, that they played, and that they connected with, that really brought everything out. So, yeah, I mean, I connected with absolutely everybody.
Yeah.
And for those reasons, right?
And like I said, it was cut and dry back then. Like, you knew who the good guys were. You knew who the bad guys were. There wasn't any gray area, honestly. And, you know, Ben, I talked to Ben about that, and that'll be coming up this Friday. He was more into the heels, too. He was a Mr. Perfect fan. He was a Jake the Snake fan. He connected with guys on that level, too. For me, Jake the Snake was very enthralling, especially because, you know, the fact that he would get close to the mic, and he wouldn't yell. He wouldn't scream. He would just talk to you like this. And he'd make you come in and listen to him. Didn't matter what he had to say. but you were listening. And that was great. I mean, that was his own technique. He knew the psychology of wrestling. Like, he totally understood that. Paz, where were you as a kid? Were you leaning towards baby faces? Did you like the heels? What grabbed your attention that made you say, I fucking love pro wrestling?
As a kid, more of a babyface. I was a Hogan guy through and through. Yeah. So when Warrior beat him at WrestleMania 6, I was not happy. I was not a happy camper. I was absolutely heartbroken. Nobody told me it was a work at that point either. You know, I was only 7, so nobody told me it was a work, and pretty upsetting experience. But definitely a face guy, a Hogan guy through and through. A few years later, I would become like a Flair guy, and I used to love like Ludwig Borga for some reason. Just, you know, some of the heels that came through there, I just fell in love with. But I was the first and foremost a Hogan guy through and through.
I want to know more about the Borga thing, but we'll have to break that down for another time, because that's actually very captivating and enthralling that you picked that. I really want to pick your brain on that one. But for me, I was a babyface guy too, obviously, until I found NWA and you know, found Ric Flair and Michael Hayes and Lex Luger back in the day. Like, Luger was a fantastic heel when he was the U.S. champion in 89. Like, I loved that incarnation of Lex Luger.
He was a lot of the opposite of Warrior as a baby, where he didn't care that his matches might be garbage. We didn't understand that back then. Yeah. We weren't overanalyzing, but you've heard people talk about, you know, how he took Luger quite a while to kind of mature in that ring. But the look, the attitude, look. Yeah. The evil swagger, he was so brilliant in it.
Absolutely right. And he had guys like Brian Pillman to play against, and Brian was your ultimate high-flying babyface back then. And
Pillman was another one of my my early favorites because, you know, it was exciting and he was fun. And he was, you know, that white meat babyface, and, you know, being from Cincinnati and him being that hometown hero, and he played football here. So it was that connection. But yeah, always a Pillman fan through any incarnation of Brian Pillman.
Yeah, and we always had Jim Ross to let us know that he played on the special teams for Cincinnati, won the Edlock Courage Award. So, yeah, I love JR when he used to give us those little insights back in the day. Vince McMahon hated that shit when he came into WWF. He's like, nobody wants to hear about their college bullshit, pal. So he stopped doing a lot of that. But anyway, we're off the tracks again. It didn't take long. We're still here to talk Savage and Warrior from WrestleMania 7. So let's get into it. I'm going to share the screen. We're going to get blocked in India and Indonesia. And it's funny, like, anytime I put even like a snippet of WWF stuff on YouTube, they automatically have certain countries that block it. It's fascinating. Well,
they only have a million people monitoring that.
That's it. That's all they have. let's see. Peacock. Here we go. I'm not even used to Peacock yet. I really.
Oh, I will say, Rob, as you're setting this thing up, you got to remember when I'm a little warrior, and I remember my wardrobe this evening. But this is as I'm growing up. Almost every Saturday, as I'm getting ready for WWF Challenge and Superstars, my mom would be so upset at me because I would take all the shoestrings out of my gym shoes. I would only be wearing my tidy whiteys. And I'd have her paint my face. So that was a regular ritual.
Wow, you really went all out for that. Anybody else?
I don't think I was still doing this when we got to WrestleMania 7, but I do remember very early on in the years of when finding Warrior, I just go out in public dressed like the Warrior.
I had one ritual. I always had to have Doritos whenever I watched wrestling, whether it was primetime or Raw later on. Like, that was my thing. Like, me and my best friend and I would watch wrestling, and we had to have a bag of Doritos with me. Like, to this day, it's just a ritual that I've always done. Carl, did you ever have any special rituals when you were watching wrestling back in the day?
I always had to have Dr. Pepper.
Okay, cool.
Always.
How about you, Paz?
I would always have either like Doritos or Lay's or some sort of snack, but it was always Wild Cherry Pepsi, and I always had to sit in a certain seat in a certain location facing the TV in a certain way.
Like Sheldon from Big Bang Theory.
So I was the only one who enjoyed wrestling with my pants off. Yeah.
I mean, later on, you know, maybe I did. You know, back when Sonny and Sable came out, maybe, you know,
that's another review show.
That is another show. So for those of you watching here, obviously you can watch along with us, but any of those on the audio feed you want to watch along, I have a timestamp on Peacock. And hopefully you're subscribed to that. Not many people are right now. The timestamp is 1:17:27 on Peacock, WrestleMania 7. This is billed as a career versus career match. To my knowledge, the first one that WWF ever did. Going into this, Rick, I know you're a Warrior fan. Did you have any hesitation as to maybe the Warrior will lose because Macho Man was such a great wrestler?
Well, I think, you know, not even inside how great of a wrestler he was. But yeah, I mean, this is, look at how how we got to this point. Savage gaining that upper hand, the underhandedness, going to any low scumbag level to get this job done. And one of the reasons, you know, when I'm going back to where I praise this thing is arguably one of the best matches in WrestleMania history, you know, especially up to this point. Was there anything greater on the line? I mean, you could say championships, but you could come back the next week and challenge for a championship. I mean, this is your career. This is your livelihood. You're leaving your ultimate dream, no pun intended, the WWF. It is all on the line. It is, there is no tomorrow for you. This is the greatest stakes on the greatest stage in all of professional wrestling. We hadn't seen it up to this point. We've seen it in with little twist since then. You know, Flair comes to mind there where he was just going to lose that match at some point, but it, you know, it wasn't on the other side there for Shawn Michaels at that time. This right here, these are the ultimate stakes, and they put together a masterpiece of a build on this thing.
Now, I know Hogan was the guy, but this obviously could have been the main event, or they could have billed it as a double main event like they did at WrestleMania 8 the following year with Hogan and Sid and Flair and Macho. So this was easily a main event anywhere in the country, anywhere in the world. Carl, heading into this, who were you rooting for?
See, it's hard because I liked both guys. Mm-hmm. And so it was, I was always kind of sitting there on the fence, and it was, you know, kind of a let's go Warrior, let's go Savage. Come on, Warrior, come on, Savage type of situation. Now, I mean, kind of knowing everything, I'm pulling for Savage is kind of, you know, how I would have gone about it, I believe.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. Paz, I'm assuming you were pulling for the Warrior in this one.
No, definitely not.
Wow, Savage, see, you pulled the swerve on me already.
Savage,
brother.
Through and through, because I still, at this point, did not forgive the Warrior for defeating Hogan the year before.
You were so, still pissed off, okay.
I was still pissed off, so I hated Warrior for like 2 years until he saved Hogan at WrestleMania 8, but I literally hated him for 2 years, and then he beat Savage, who's another guy you look at like, oh, it's, you know, like a god of wrestling. Like, he beat another guy who's a freaking god, like, damn it, this guy again. So I was pissed. I wanted Savage. Even though he was a heel, I wanted Savage. It was weird. And even when Slaughter beat Warrior, I was okay with it. Even though I didn't love, even though I was like, god damn it, Slaughter, anti-American.
I missed the signs. How did I miss the signs? I should have known you still had resentment and contempt for the Warrior from the year before. Before we get started, Rick, did you ever think, like, Macho Man would lose, or when he did lose, like maybe he would go to the NWA or WCW? Did that ever cross your mind? Because obviously we knew about the other federations, whether through cable or the After magazines. Did that ever kind of say, hey, maybe he'll go to WCW?
You know what, really thinking of, because I you know, obviously we had access to the different dirt sheets, as I, you know, said, I had my uncles that were involved in, you know, watching those different promotions and that. I don't think that ever crossed my mind for anybody then. You know, this was this moment. It was about the WWF. It was, and that was one of the things that WWF was so great about. And when you talked about how Vince and Pritchard, they didn't really like when JR would talk about these past accomplishments, because they created and crafted and cultivated this own little world of their own.
Right.
And that's really where you existed. So I probably until now never even thought about it to this day.
Well, that's interesting. For whatever reason, I did. I expected, like, Macho Man to show up on WCW, like, a couple months later. Because, I mean, Jake did it in, what, 92?
Well, you had regularly seen that. You know, I know immediately when, you know, even being shocked when Rick Rude immediately showed up, mm-hmm. you know, after, you know, the losing the Intercontinental title back to Warrior. And I just, you know, those things, they would shock me and be like, wow, you know, he's going to be here with the potential taking on these names. But you didn't think about that reality of business, you know, what's going on behind the scenes, contracts, things like that. You just were entertained. Now, on the business side of this thing, I did pick up, going back and looking for some interesting tidbits about this before we jump into the thing.
Yeah.
Did you know that, obviously, before we had the on-air marriage, that Macho and Elizabeth, we all know they were married, that to actually sell that, in case anyone would go digging up legal forms or go to the court or anything like that, he went and actually filed for a real separation, so it wouldn't appear that they were married. He was that dedicated to his craft.
I did not know that. Did any of you guys know that?
No.
Wow.
I thought they might have been really separated at that point.
I thought they were too, actually. But
I don't know if everything was, you know, happy go lucky and all that. But
right.
You know, listening to a couple of different interviews, Pritchard had talked about it. I mean, that's how dedicated that Macho Man was to the craft and making sure that he protected his business.
Wow, that's pretty insane, actually. But that's real dedication.
Now you can't even get them to stop, you know, doing selfies with the guy they just went to, you know, had a bloodbath with.
That reminds me of Alexa Bliss, you know, who has a crazy character on TV, and then posts selfies of her fiance on her Twitter, like, oh hey, it's just
yeah, I'm at Disney right now.
Yeah, right.
Loving life.
God, like, come on, it's Twitter. Can you at least not have kayfabe on Twitter, for crying out loud? Or at least have a separate account just for your family or something where you can post that. But on your Alexa account, just, yeah, I don't know. Anyway, that's for another day. Anything else that you learned about this, Rick, before we start?
Let's roll it, man. Let's jump into the excitement.
Let's roll it. All right, guys, if you're following along with us at home on the audio feed and you do want to listen to us and watch at the same time, your timestamp is 1:17:27. I'll give you a countdown. 3, 2, 1, play. When I say play, we will all hit play. We'll start it in 3, 2, 1, play.
Hey, Sherry was really starting to sexy it up at this point.
Yes, she was.
There we go.
Oh, yeah. A little sexual innuendo for you.
Just a little bit. That is all I want from you, warrior. You know what he's thinking. Oh, yeah. Well, I know what I was thinking. He obviously was not thinking that at all.
Do you think he had to tape it down in the back?
Maybe. Maybe. Even his tights, you know, like his warrior face paint gimmick on the back with the American flag, like, that was pretty cool looking.
He had
the red, white, and blue tassels. He really did. He really took care of his character.
Oh, what a shot. You ever notice that Viper always came off that he was thinking everything was real?
Yes. He did a good job of that, actually.
Yeah, very, very good.
Yeah, I don't think Piper gets enough credit for being a color commentator. Like,
he was great, yeah.
Yeah.
But he was one of those guys that, you know, that were, you know, a great talker that could make that transition.
Yes.
Or you didn't get that with everybody. Because, I mean, I know, like, they tried it once, you know, for a little bit with DiBiase. And as great as he was in his promos on that live mic, he just couldn't make that transition to the booth.
Yeah, but then you had guys like Perfect, who I thought did a fantastic job on Superstars with Vince. I even thought Stan Lane was decent, but I don't think he got...
That right there. I can't believe, Paz, that you would actually have the audacity to cheer that there. That traitorous bastard, Sergeant Slaughter. The Iraqis and what they had done.
I was so pissed, man. He beat Hogan. That's my guy, you know? I hold a grudge.
Well, I'll give it, since you are a great American. It wasn't so much that he beat Warrior, but it gave Hogan the opportunity to go defend America.
Yes, that's right. He ain't putting over something right here, is it, Miss Elizabeth?
How the director know where to go? Like, I thought that was great from Heenan, but like, really?
They're zooming in. Even back then, they had top-notch production.
They did.
Now, I think what's really cool here is, because now they make things so obvious. Like, oh my God, she's sitting front row. How did that happen? At least they moved her. She was, like, removed.
True. That is true.
And they didn't, like, pick up on it. Heenan had to tell them, like, who is that? Is she? So it was a nice little job by them. This little added emotion to the match, too. You know, you're like, well, what the hell is Miss Elizabeth?
Yeah, why is Elizabeth?
Yeah, why is she out there? Yeah.
A couple of years. So.
Very cool.
I heard some stories here with the I guess what are those? The thrones that they're carrying them on.
Mm-hmm.
They said they were awkwardly built and they were heavy as shit. And everybody carrying it there was so nervous that if, you know, oh my God, if we drop the Macho Man.
Yeah. That would have been catastrophic.
Yeah.
And it looks heavy as shit, too. And then you put, you know, 400 pounds on top of it with him and Sherry. Like, yeah.
We're a little surprised that they went to Elizabeth so early in the match. Or I guess maybe that does make sense because you don't want to take away from the action.
True. Yeah, no, that's a good point. But it's, I mean, it's a nice job of foreshadowing, at least.
Yeah, yep. And it kind of says, like, wow, maybe his career really is over. Like, she's coming to say goodbye. It kind of throws an extra added emotion in there.
And, I mean, honestly, she'd fuck with him every year. Like, she was at WrestleMania 6. It came out with Dusty and Sapphire. So she had a history of messing with Macho Man at WrestleMania.
True.
Just like a woman. Acting all sweet and innocent. But...
You know what's really sad? Other than Dave Hebner here, everybody that's involved in this match right now is no longer with us. Gorilla, Heenan, Macho, Sherry, Warrior.
Wow.
They're all gone. Yeah. That's crazy. And Finkel. Yeah, Finkel's gone. I mean, everybody except for Hebner are no longer with us. I don't want to be a downer, but I mean, that's a sad thought, really.
Now this is the big first surprise, not Elizabeth, for this match.
Yeah. Shocking. Very good psychology by the Warrior.
Yes.
Shows you how serious he is. He's just gonna walk. First time ever, he's gonna walk, he's not running.
Yep.
Well, he's got the new look, first time for the jacket and all that as well. But hey, you know, just not to compliment, you know, that Warrior has a little bit stronger scope on what's happening here, but it tells you as a fan, this is a little bit more serious. This isn't the same attack, the same game plan. Warrior's wised up that he's got to slow things down and keep an eye on Savage.
Do you think somebody told him to do that, or do you think that was something he came up on his own?
I think Carl told him.
I did.
Yep. I feel like he did it on his own. I think these guys are allowed to do whatever they want.
Yeah.
I'm just going to slightly disagree with you on this, pause. I'm going to go out on a limb. Maybe not Warrior. If what we heard, you know, maybe that just wasn't in his style.
Maybe Pat Patterson suggested.
Well, I'm going to say that Macho Man did a lot of this.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense.
Everything about these guys is so much more important than it is today. They're focusing in on their gear, like, oh, look at this. Like, look at their look. Look at their entrance. Oh, he's not running to the ring. He's walking to the ring. Look at what Savage is wearing. Looks like $1 million.
Yeah.
Warrior looks like $1 million. I mean, just the guys, just so much larger than life back then. They just knew what they were doing, and you would think they would just translate forward going years. And year after year, I feel like it's gotten worse. These guys aren't larger than life. They don't know what they're doing. They don't have the look.
I mean, that's what it was back then, though. Like, that was WrestleMania. That was the top of the top. That was the Super Bowl of professional wrestling, where you had to go over the top with everything, and it was your time to shine, right? So,
well, and even here, you know, this is about the storytelling and the intensity. Where nowadays, okay, let's get there and start getting our shit in.
Yeah,
You know,
yeah, you're absolutely right about that, Rick.
Yeah, you know, as I was talking about how Macho and how he approached this match, you know, how underhanded he would strike out of the shadows, it's very telling. You watch early in this match how great they're continuing that and then foreshadowing a little bit into this match, because Macho's going to try to sneak up on him a couple times here, and Warrior's real quick to catch him there.
Yeah.
Right there.
Now, we just saw a shot of Warrior's amazingly chiseled ass cheeks. But he has, on the back of his tights, means much more than this, with the painting of the Winged Eagle title. That's a pretty big thing. You know, that also sets the tone for how important this match is to Warrior. That, you know, you could be champion any day, but like, as Rick said before we started, this is my career, this is my livelihood. This is a big deal. So whether it was his tights, or his demeanor when he came out, the intensity, the walking to the ring, the whole presentation of this match, before we even get started, was fantastic.
It was. It, honestly, those little things that just, I mean, then, real time, we wouldn't have thought anything about it. No. But being able to go back and rewatch this stuff and kind of analyze it a little bit, you really do see how all these little bits and pieces kind of came together to create this best-selling novel that we're getting to witness again today.
You mentioned the little things. I'm assuming, since you're a Canadian, that Arda Ocal is one of your favorites to listen to back in the day. He was always very particular about the little things during his podcast with Jimmy Corderas. So,
oh yes, a couple of great guys they are.
Absolutely.
Well, there you go. He looks for that shot and get the distraction there from the beautiful Queen Sherry.
And Sherry was a great manager, not because, you know, obviously she's gorgeous and, you know, but she was a worker. So she knew exactly what spot to be in. Your best managers like her, like Heenan, would know where to be at the right time. Whereas, and Ben and I were just discussing this on our Mega Power show coming up here, Elizabeth was beautiful, but she wasn't a worker. She didn't really understand the business like a worker would. She was more of, you know, your trophy wife. But Sherry was so great because she knew exactly where to be and what it took to be a compelling heel manager, right, Rick?
Well, I think, you know, when it comes to Miss Elizabeth, I mean, she was elegance defined. I mean, she stood and shined brighter than any other woman around. But she still was that girl next door. She was a true Princess Diana professional wrestling.
Yeah.
Now, in a case here, you know, to go back to Sherry, yeah, look at the bump she's just taking there.
Mm-hmm.
And back then, you know, it is rare to see any of the women getting physical with the guys there.
Yeah.
It, you know, and very rare, but she knows how to handle herself. Really, in the grand scheme of things, as we sit and talk about the greats in that position, from women ring workers to transitioning to, you know, corner position, I think that she's kind of been cut short when we talk about truly the great ones, not just for women, but just performers, talents inside of professional wrestling. You got her right there, you know. It's just a slight little distraction changes the tide here for her man, the Macho Man.
Love that clothesline.
I do love that clothesline.
One thing, though, about Elizabeth, she was great at selling, like, the emotion in her face.
True.
Like, she'd get worried, she'd get sad, she'd get upset. She was always good at that. Definitely not a worker, though. Not at all.
Well, again, I don't know how much she was actually smartened up back in the day. Like, was she really smartened up, or was she really acting on actual real emotion? How much did Savage actually tell her was real, and what was kayfabe?
Oh, you got to believe.
Look at this.
You think she was smart enough, Rick?
With being that tied in, I mean, she might not have known all the inner workings of the business, but enough, I believe. But if you're not professionally trained there, and, you know, you're talking about positioning and timing, yeah, you get the early showing here.
All right, Savage needs to regroup here.
The power. Now the frustration beginning with Notch.
Hebner quick to get that chair out of the way.
And you talked about that slow demeanor with the Warrior as well. Just, you know, Savage coming at him, and then Warrior kind of setting him down, standing up, and then just giving that little bit of a slap to the face.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't something that we were used to seeing from the Warrior, because he slowed things down and he wasn't just that quick, powerful type of character that we were used to.
Probably because they told me he had to go 20 minutes and he was like, oh shit.
I better pace myself. Rick, you brought up a good point before when, you know, Carl was asking maybe who structured this match, but I can definitely see, knowing how detailed Macho Man was, like him and Steamboat completely, you know, move for move, worked out that match at WrestleMania 3. I 100% agree now that he coached Warrior up so big about, this is how you're going to handle this match. This is the demeanor you're going to have. It's going to be a slow-paced match. It's going to be a brawl. We hate each other. You know, we want to destroy each other. We want to end each other's careers. I can't have you flying around the ring like a fucking moron. I need you to be really serious about this. Now that you mention that, it's... You're 100% right.
Well, again, it's just, you know, the commitment to his craft.
Yeah.
And even, you know, knowing this is going to be his last hurrah for a little bit. I'd also heard in a couple interviews in some places that, you know, he needed to get away. Yeah. He needed some time off the road. That was the plan. And then there, which is really a genius marketing ploy, they were going to encourage a write-in campaign for people to send letters if they should reinstate Macho Man. And that would actually, though, that would give WWE access to pretty much like the mailing spam list. Mail. Yeah,
a mailing list today. And they did that with Jake the Snake when he got hurt by DiBiase. They did it with Hogan. They had Tugboat rooting, you know, pulling for him and having people write in. So, yeah, you're right. They're famous for getting addresses for people for their mailing list.
Look how physical she's already getting here.
Yeah, Warrior beat the crap out of her.
Which is funny because Hogan would beat the crap out of her, too. It's like there was so much physical violence on a woman back in the day that you couldn't do now. Well, I guess you couldn't TNA, but...
I swear, Sherry had to have had some production background to her. When Warrior went over and was on the ground there the first time, she came right there. She knew exactly where that camera was when she bent over in front of that camera. Yeah, I swear that she had production background. She knows exactly what she was doing.
And if she didn't, I mean, if you really want to go out there and say, did Macho Man literally choreograph every single part of this match? Like, you're going to stand here, you're going to do that. You could be right. It could have been Sherry's, you know, professional prowess. Again, you never know. Maybe Savage worked all that out with Vince.
No, I'm going to say, I'm agreeing with Carl here. That
okay,
she,
I was just playing devil's advocate.
She would just know how to do that. And you look at how many people spend, you hear fans so often that nowadays, oh, that person's ready. Why do they have to go to development? Why are they at the Performance Center? Why are they in NXT there? And that's exactly why you see people that aren't ready for that big stage of the red and blue yet, because of the positioning and the timing like that.
That's true. That's very true.
Look at pretty much everyone on AEW's roster.
That's fair. That's a fair point, Paz.
Even the Young Bucks not ready for TV.
20 years, they're still not ready for TV.
Yeah, crazy. Like a Warrior.
I never understood that spot. Did Macho Man kind of mess up? Like, he wasn't standing. Like to me, that was kind of a... Was that just a Warrior thing, maybe? That...
I think it's a little bait.
Okay.
Macho Man playing a little bit of possum there. Hey, let me let this guy wear himself out a little bit, and then boom, I'm going to get him here.
Kind of fits him with Warrior, though. He's like a wild, out of control. He's going to just go for something. Savage baits him in, moves out of the way.
And that's a good point there, Paz. We look at Warrior early in this match, and he gets tired. He starts going into those old tendencies. That's to the Macho Man trying to, you know, that mental part of the game. Now that's from production positioning, right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
She's on the hard camera. Yeah, yeah. You gotta love that dress too.
You know, see, if that would have been Heenan's ugly ass, he would have been on the other side, so he just had to stare at his mug.
That's right.
She knew what sold. Reminds me of, you guys remember No Holds Barred, the match, the movie, the cage match between Hogan and Beefcake and Zeus and Savage. There was a spot near the end of that match where Sherry climbed up the cage and the cameraman was right there to get a nice little upskirt for us.
Yep.
Very well done by Kevin Dunn and his production team. I don't know who called that shot, but it was pretty memorable. At least as a 13-year-old kid, it was memorable for me.
You know, that's one... As we were talking earlier about, you know, has Sherry been sold short? And you talk about how great she is as a worker. Look at her in any capacity, what she's doing here. Mm-hmm. If over all those years, you never really heard, like, backstage stories about, you know, about her, like we have about, you know, maybe
Sunny.
To the extreme, or Sunny, Missy Hyatt.
Yeah.
Even, you know, woman, a few ladies that were in the territories with World Class and all that.
Yep.
You never really heard about that with Sherry.
It's a good point. She was a pro.
Yeah, she knew not to. Oh, yeah. Come on, ref. Come on, referee.
Perfect distraction there.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep. Working her spot.
Oh, there's Vladimir the fan in the first row.
I had a talk with JB lately, and JB actually met Vladimir at one of the fan fests. He's like, you might not remember this guy, and he gave me the description of him. Like, fuck yeah, that's Vladimir. Right. Like, everybody knew who he was.
That might have been the greatest ref bump. I mean, he just went like a dead fish.
He hit the ropes. And he, like, eh. he went boneless is what he did. Here, Sherry's literally being involved the entire match.
Yeah.
That was a great spot.
Sherry's been involved, but she hasn't been involved, if you kind of understand that. Like, she made it look so good that you recognize that she was there, but it didn't seem like she was overtaking everything from the match itself.
Feels like more of an extension from Macho's moveset than anything else.
Now, had she not been involved in this match, how do you think it would have played out, Rick? It's a completely different dynamic.
Yeah, we might not be talking about the memorable match, or it's
true.
Definitely, she's just as important as any of the competitors.
Absolutely, absolutely right.
But look at this. All right, so 16,000 just go to their feet. That warrior's about to bust this lady in the head.
Yeah, they're loving that. Yeah.
Yes. I still remember the atomic drop that Hogan would give her all the time. Like, that was their thing.
What's great about Warrior, he was always good in the big matches. I think Jericho actually gave him credit, if you remember that infamous Warrior DVD where they were burying him from WWE a few years ago. He was the only one that said every big match he was ever in, everyone remembers it because he was good in it. So he was a big match performer, but that is so true about him.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Is it? Don't they claim that they actually started off trying to make a positive documentary?
Yeah.
And then after they interviewed everybody, they were just like, whoa.
The first 10 minutes or so was pretty positive. But yeah, then they get into like the promos and all that, and people start burying them. But.
Well, even Bret Hart, when his DVD came out, they said originally it was going to be called Screw, the Bret Hart story, and it was going to be all them ripping him. So, like, if as long as you agree to do the DVD, they'll be positive. But if you don't, like, Warrior didn't agree, so they did the self-destruction. Like, nope, we're going to rip you the whole time.
That's a really good point.
Oh, yeah, I never really bought that the intent wasn't the out of the gate was the self-destruction, but they did twist it like, oh, we interviewed everyone, and no one said anything good, so we had to come up with a new angle.
Oh, man, I missed that elbow.
What? He's going up to the top again.
Right away, too. Like, he didn't waste any time. Like, he's now, like, I'm gonna put this motherfucker away.
Now today's fans, this is what they would use an example. See, even back then, they hit him with 20 finishers and didn't put the match away. But it speaks to the magnitude of this moment.
That's right. Yeah.
Everything is on the line here.
That's right. You have to go to that next level. Even like Bobby said, take it while you got it. I mean,
what is he up to here? Did he hit like 7 of these things?
I don't remember.
I think he hit 5, I think.
I thought it was 3.
It was 3.
Yeah, that's...
This is 4.
Yep.
This is, I think, where it really started setting in for me is that young fan that this was it. This was just going around that coffin and tapping those nails.
Yeah.
Shows you how much Savage really respected and liked the Warrior, though. He's going to give him 5 elbows and he's going to kick out. You know
that's
what I mean?
True.
Like,
that's
he
true.
Really, really liked Warrior a lot, went to bat for him, respected him.
I think he
let
laid
him
last...
kick out of this.
I think he laid that last one in. And I love the deliberate count by Hebner.
Yep.
Yeah.
And this was Dave, I believe, right? I think Dave was the bigger Hebner at the time.
Yes.
Yeah, but they had similar counts.
That moment right there is where the RBV tear works began, because the tears of joy, I remember. They thinking it was so much that close to being over that my hero was gone, and the tears of joy at that kick out.
And Paz is like, this son of a bitch.
Damn, I thought it was over. Damn.
I mean, this is on par with Hulk Hogan, to be quite honest. Like, he was a brighter, you know, more intense version of Hulk Hogan, but that's a Hogan move. It's the hulking up here, pretty much, like the Warrior's doing. That's babyface 101 back in WWF days.
It was even the same essential moveset with, you know, the block of the punch and then throwing the punch of his own. That's coming off of the ropes. Instead of it being a leg drop, it was a clothesline, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I'll tell you one time it didn't work for Hogan. WrestleMania 6.
Yeah,
brutal. That's brutal. Too soon, Rick. Too soon.
Great finish, though. That's a great finish for that night.
It was. It was.
And shocking as hell.
And Hogan was the only one to ever, you know, kick out of the press slam.
Until now.
Until now.
Another thing, too. Warrior was awesome at playing to the crowd.
Yes. He was.
Ooh.
I mean, this is like the original, like, super false finish match. Like, we didn't get, like, now we get it every WrestleMania and every NXT and all that, right? But, like, every week in AEW. But back in the day, this never happened.
But it rightfully works here.
Yes, it does.
This is, you know, one of the most epic moments in my wrestling existence. Yeah. You know, him questioning the gods, you know, those that supposedly were powering us, the warrior nation, the little warriors.
Why have you forsaken me? It's pretty much like what he's asking, right?
I mean, yep.
As we're recording on Easter, it's kind of
it's
kind of apropos, right?
Looking up to the cosmos, asking, is it still there? Is the power still available? Is it coursing through the veins?
And now, what were you thinking here, Rick, as a small child?
I remember this is another emotional twist here. This is probably where, you know, I hit that climax there. He's walking away. He is walking away. He is giving this thing up. You can't go down like this.
Bobby's doing a great job. Bobby's doing a great job of selling this as well. I was thinking right now, like, would Vince have done a better job than Gorilla at selling this? No, Bobby Heenan picked that. Whatever Gorilla couldn't do, Bobby was smart enough to pick up on that.
Well, and what we really know, you know, now the feelings from Heenan towards Warrior, you know, really the spies, and he's able to, he's so masterful in his craft that he's able to deliver it like that.
He's a pro. I mean, just like even Jesse Ventura, like, Jesse may not have liked everybody, but I mean, he was a pro, and he still knew what it took to get the guys over. And that's another thing that's lost today. Like, once Jim Ross is gone and Tony are gone, like, you got Michael Cole is not really putting the guys over. He's feeding the information or, you know, whatever lines are in his head. But, I mean, like, to me, I don't think they do a good enough job of painting that picture and telling a story as an announcer that they used to. That's another lost art, I think, is putting the boys and the girls over. They don't do that anymore. I could be wrong, but, I mean, that's just how I feel about the way they announced the matches now.
Oh, what a spot.
Carl, would you agree with that?
I 100% do. I mean, you talk Michael Cole. Michael Cole is essentially just repeating verbatim what he's being fed through his earpiece, essentially, which is unfortunate because, I mean, I think that Michael Cole and Corey Graves, and, you know, any of those guys that are there, if they were to be given a little bit of freedom, possibly, to kind of spew out kind of like we're doing right now, how they're actually feeling about this matchup that's happening, they would get a lot more emotion out of it and be able to really work together because they're working together all the time anyways, so they'd be able to feel each other out.
And now, don't get me wrong, Michael Cole is a pro. I mean, he is a fantastic announcer. To jump into this world and never know anything about it and to do as well as he has and have, I mean, that shows you his work ethic. But is Vince, I know we're getting off track here, but Vince McMahon is really the reason why they don't broadcast like this anymore.
Well, they made a transition. It's your different styling and commentary. And one of, you know, my biggest issues is, you know, when I work indie shows and run into, you know, individuals that try to make themselves a star. No, you're a storyteller, and that's your job. Now, you do have a little bit of salesman in you. And the problem is when you get into WWE now, they have transitioned so hard into that salesman. Hey, guys, by the way, make sure that you download and listen to the Monday Locker Room here on the Hameen Media Group with myself, Ben Hameen, and Dr. May. You know, they're trying to sell all the time.
Yeah.
But to the point, though, for WWE announcers today, what stories are there to tell? What compelling angles do we have going on?
That's fair. No, that's fair.
As you got Warrior up here back on the ropes, look for that. A big shoulder block again.
That's three shoulder tackles that he hit him with. And Macho Man, being that smart veteran, went outside and took a powder and, you know, Warrior couldn't get the pin. So that's smart booking right there as well. And what kind of a statement does that make? With the foot on the chest, that is like, I just dominated your ass, and your career's over.
Yeah.
And Savage let it happen. Shows you again, he loves the Warrior.
Savage was a consummate professional. Like, say what you want about him personally.
Well, I mean, look, he's just adding here. We've already got the pin.
Yeah.
Now the foot is back on him.
Got to get that photo up.
I actually think he goes and... I think he makes a lap and goes and does it again. Yeah, got the new gear. He's ready to ride out of here.
I love that coat. That
is awesome.
You got to go in there. You know, the Hogan must pose. This is the Warrior must pose with that sweet new gear here. But, you know, really to the Macho Man, a lot of people would look at that as maybe being a little degrading. But as you guys said, we talked about putting this match together. It's got to be on him. Isn't that really a huge addition? A building block into the Macho story that we're telling here. I mean, he came into this thing as the second biggest heel in the company, obviously outside of the traitor Slaughter, who's the sympathizer with Iraq. Now you've got Macho Man there. He's the ultimate cheating bastard. He comes in here as the ultimate heel. You've got the witch, the wicked witch of the West out there.
She was the wicked witch.
And now he's been ultimately broken down and defeated. So his next move is to be rebuilt, right?
That's right. That's absolutely right.
But he really put Warrior over here on his way, quote unquote, on his way out.
We get the setup here for the rebuild. Mm-hmm. Here, and you know, what's going to happen here with Elizabeth.
And, you know, this entire thing, if Savage didn't want that to happen, I don't think it would have happened.
Yep.
If Savage, he could have just rolled out of the ring and just let Warrior be in that ring for a few moments, and then he could have got himself back into the ring for this spot that we're seeing right now with Sherry, right?
Even more degrading than just having what the Warrior did to him. Now he's getting kicked while he's down by, you know, what we've, not just a manager, his queen.
Yeah, his queen. That's right. And she's upset because essentially... She's out of a job too, right? I mean, she's not the queen anymore. Yeah. She loved being the queen. Well, very athletic move there by Liz.
Yeah.
Where the hell is security?
She runs like a girl.
Right?
Yeah, where is security? What's that chick running in the ring for?
Peacock's can actually edit this out so they probably will. Don't try to run into the ring.
And that was a great bump taken by Sherry because Liz could have killed her on that one.
Look at Savage here. He's great.
Look at the mannerisms, the body language, everything about this is magnificent.
And even during the match, it's so slow paced, but you don't feel it because it's so emotional. You're just so invested. You're thinking about the selling. You're not like, oh, the match is slow paced. You're like, wow, the selling. Oh, the emotion. What the hell's going to happen next?
And it was a slow paced match. I mean,
big time.
You're right. I never even thought about that. It never entered my mind as a kid. What are you doing here, huh? Who the hell bought you a ticket? He's probably like, what the hell is shit? Why was Sherry kicking the shit out of me?
Look at the fans. The fans are going nuts right now.
His whole demeanor changed too.
Yeah.
Like the look on his face, his mannerisms have changed. He looks like the 88 Savage right now.
Well, everything's gone. He's lost everything. I don't know if he's even realized that yet. But you know that strong, that rock, that foundation, what he could always count on is right there back in front of him.
Yeah,
Savage is so great at like manipulating the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all he does is point, and they're like, "Come on, Macho!" Like,
yeah, just looking around and point. I know
he's the master.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, slowly inching closer, slowly.
All right, this is when I lost it as a kid.
Like, there you go. I mean, it's top three moment of WrestleMania right there. When you take everything from this story, from the characters, the charisma, what was on the line, the ultimate delivering moment, right here, right what we're watching, the greatest in WrestleMania.
I cried as a kid. I'm not ashamed to admit that.
And Savage's awesome theme song also helps.
Yes, that's
the
true.
Emotion of it.
And then he puts her up on the shoulder. Oh man, come on.
You just show these kids crying and
the
then
crowd
the
shots.
Girl,
yeah.
Yeah, the girl crying and stuff. That they love that shot.
Man, I still wish I had that Warrior Wrestling buddy.
Me too. I still got
my Hogan one. Oh, that.
I had a Macho King, actually.
I had Warrior, Macho, DiBiase, and Hogan.
Yeah. Yep. I'm sure you can still get them on eBay now for $70, right? Yes, I do remember that woman crying.
Yep.
And for women that aren't really wrestling, that's Bobby. That's a great line by Bobby. I didn't mean to step over his line there, but as a woman who probably wasn't really a wrestling fan and might have been there with her husband, like, this was a big deal for them, like, playing on that soap opera emotion.
It's the ultimate love story come full circle.
It is. And then this is great. This is perfect. No, you're not going to hold the ropes for me. I'm going to hold the ropes for you. Because Sherry would always hold the ropes for him. Just, yep. You're right, it's the little things, the little nuances that you wouldn't normally notice. She's bawling her eyes out.
I wonder, does she get residuals?
Maybe she was a plant. You never know, she could have been a production wife or something, you never know.
She seemed like she was pretty legit. Pretty into it.
I was stretching there.
This is like that awesome Flair line, if this wasn't real... Would they be crying in the back?
Mm-hmm.
The real emotion here of the fan. I mean, this is awesome.
And obviously this led to the match made in hell and the match made in heaven at SummerSlam 91. We'll never forget the proposal. Elizabeth! Will you marry me?
That would be interesting, Paz, as you mentioned, to get the scoop. From what it was like when everybody went back through the curtain.
Mm.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, how many people knew she was there? Like, how many of the boys knew that this was going to happen or she was there? Because I don't think Vince, you know.
Well, I mean, we're talking about, you know, that raw emotion from this match. And you feel it from the top of the arena through the realization to catering and the back of the locker room.
Yeah.
Pay-per-view audience in the history of pay-per-view looked on. Oh, there's that plug I was talking about.
Gorilla's
so
the best.
How did Gorilla know that was the largest pay-per-view audience ever? As it was going on live,
because they knew where they were streaming it.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. So, having watched that again, obviously it still holds up to this day. But I'll start with you, Paz. Are you still pissed off at Warrior?
No, I've forgiven him all these years.
I just
want
to make sure you didn't have this.
I've forgiven him, yeah. Okay. No, just another awesome match by Warrior and Savage. Obviously, they've had a bunch. But I love that match. Still, like we were talking to RBV the other day, still in my top five WrestleMania matches of all time. Love that match.
Yeah, absolutely right. I mean, to this day, I mean, all these years later, it's still fun to watch. And I haven't even seen it in probably 10 years or so. But, you know, it just makes me feel like I'm a kid again. It just brings me back to those good times.
Totally, you know, holds up, too. I feel like it's funny. People are like, oh, this doesn't hold up. That holds up. Well, watch 80s and 90s wrestling. It does. It holds up.
The pacing, again, like we talked about, and the psychology of that match, the way it was structured, the way it was booked, the way everybody knew their roles and knew exactly what they were supposed to do. You can make a case for it. And Rick, I know you're going to make a case for it in a minute for being the greatest match ever, but... It's a perfectly constructed match. Carl, watching it again all these years later, any new thoughts, anything that you may have not picked up on before that you learned today by watching it again?
I mean, again, just going back to those simple little things that really you didn't pick up on. And until watching it today, because I've watched this match numerous times before, right? But not until today did I really realize and put together in my head going, oh wait, this is bigger than this championship, and then it clicked. I'm like, wait a second, yeah, because Rick mentioned, okay, this was like career versus like, this is it, this is the absolute end, like you're not working, you're done. So yeah, right, and just being able to watch through and pick up on those little things that happened was just fantastic. I loved it.
I agree. I saw things now that I didn't really notice before. And really, it was a lot of Sherry's involvement and you know, sitting under the learning tree of Rip and Ben and all the greats that we have here at HMG. And, you know, I'm starting to see things in a different light as well from, you know, a working standpoint. But, like, you know, Sherry's placement in that match, it was perfect. It would have been a completely different dynamic if Sherry wasn't involved in this match. And who knows? Like Rick said, we probably wouldn't be talking about it as being one of the greatest matches ever, even though both are two of the greatest personalities in the history. Rick, you've actually kind of sold me a little bit, but let's hear your argument of why you think this was the best match.
Well, yeah, I'm going to go back to those points. You know, pro wrestling, it is not defined by movesets and spots. Again, it is about characters. It is about moments. It is about emotion and tremendous storytelling. And you had all of that here. And you look at, you can make this argument, Warrior, one of the worst in-ring workers of all time, but you look at the charisma, you look at the draw, again, the emotion in there with Tamachi, just hands down, without arguing, Ultimate Warrior's greatest match of all time. And that raw emotion, what that feel, it embodied everything about professional wrestling, especially on a grand stage like WrestleMania, the biggest stakes at the biggest stage of them all. And it brought people in like that. And it's still, I remember young RBV back in 91, that incredible emotion that I've had there. One of the, you know, the matches that, you know, some 30 something years later that I still have this incredible passion, this still love for professional wrestling, and that contributed to that. And rewatching it, I could feel that emotion again. Before we started recording, I made a comment about how I've never felt, you know, less enthusiastic about a WrestleMania. Seeing a moment like that gives me hope that even though we didn't hit an incredible build, that something so magnificent can happen over the course of this next week with all the programming we've got, that you can recapture. And I ultimately hope that even in this modern era, what that match was able to do for me, that it does for a young fan that will be sitting here in a spot like we are 30, 40 years later, trying to share their enjoyment and trying to pass on the greatest genre form of entertainment in the world, which is professional wrestling.
I couldn't have said that better myself, Rick. I think you're absolutely right about that. You know, for me, like matches like Taker and Shawn at WrestleMania 25 is, you know, high up on my list just because of the emotion. And even 26, you know, with career being on the line then and Shawn Michaels ending his career there, it is those moments that you don't get anymore. And I wish we did. You know, WrestleMania sells right now. It's not Roman. It's not Daniel Bryan. It's not Drew. It's WrestleMania. Like, and that's what Vince McMahon wanted to be. He wanted WWE to be the marquee. He wanted WrestleMania to be the marquee. They talk about WrestleMania moments, but that's not what sells anymore. Regardless of the buildup or whoever's involved, WrestleMania is that big of a deal that no matter what, we're still going to watch it every year. Even though we might not all watch the week-to-week product, we're going to watch the Royal Rumble. We're going to watch WrestleMania probably until we die. I mean, unless the product gets really fucking bad. But I mean, I still think I'll be watching WrestleMania, hopefully, you know, 65, if I'm still here. That might have been a stretch, but you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't matter what's going on with the product. WrestleMania is the draw, like the Super Bowl. Doesn't matter who's playing. You might not even be invested in either team's playing. We're pretty much all going to watch the Super Bowl every year, too. That's at the point that they're at. Now, regarding what you said, Rick, about the moments, why they still say they have, you know, it's all about the WrestleMania moment, I don't think there's anything that could be that captivating as what we just watched.
WrestleMania moment is you would win your match and you point at the sign. That's how they define a WrestleMania moment now. Yeah. It's not the emotion. It's not if you can supercharge, you know, 80 to 100,000 people. That's not what it's about. It's can you have some just ridiculous spot that might not make any sense and point at a sign.
Or Shane jumping off something onto, you know, like 30 feet in the air. Like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. That's a moment now. Or Kevin Owens jumping off the sign last year at the PC. Like, that's what they consider a WrestleMania moment. You know, like a Jeff Hardy kind of bump like that. You know what I mean? It's not about the emotion really anymore. It's just about the, I guess, spectacle.
I mean, hey, what I think where they've really botched and dropped the ball heading into this year's WrestleMania is you had a tremendous story with Edge and the trail of, not, I would say redemption, but rebirth, a rebuilding, a true climbing back up that mountain. And here we go again. They completely botched it.
Mm-hmm. They did. You're absolutely right about that.
I have a weird feeling about that, though. Feeling about that, that as soon as they realized it was going to be in front of a live crowd, they're like, I don't think Edge is going to get the reaction we want him to get. So they had to put Daniel Bryan in there.
Yeah, that's bullshit. That's what I think. Yeah. No, I agree. But, I mean, that's a bullshit excuse for them. Like, yeah. Edge, if they learned anything from the Royal Rumble last year with Edge returning, people still clamor for him. And to be in front of a live crowd again, because you got to remember, Edge's last two matches were not in front of a real live crowd. I mean, right. It was the plants at the PC and all that, but, you know, he had the greatest match ever with Randy Orton, and then the last man standing match at last year's WrestleMania. This will be the first actual live crowd that Edge is back in front of since the Royal Rumble last year. So to add it, Daniel Bryan, no disrespect to Daniel Bryan. Yeah, you're right. It's a total bullshit move because they didn't have enough confidence. Right,
not to overly dissect that card. They shouldn't even have had Edge and Roman Reigns in there. They should have stayed the path, told that year-long story of Edge and Orton. Yeah. Let them take care of business over on the Red brand. Mm-hmm. And you can immediately feel, you know, watching SmackDown these last couple of weeks, there is something special about Daniel Bryan. He is an A-plus player. I mean, he just brings a different level of intensity. You would have been fine with Daniel Bryan and Roman Reigns standing alone on the Blue brand. And then, you know, Edge and Orton, I don't know where that leaves us with Lashley and McIntyre, but I'll be honest with you, if we're starting to lay out a year-long path to WrestleMania at last year's time, they're not on the radar.
I agree, and I think they jumped the gun booking Sheamus and Drew too early. I thought Sheamus and Drew would have had a fantastic WrestleMania match, given the fact of their friendship going back to when they were teenagers.
Everything is 6 months of booking in six minutes.
It is. I think they could have put on a hell of a show. No disrespect against towards Lashley either. Lashley's been around a long time. Lashley has done a great job in this last year to really build up his character and get you to actually care about him. Disbanding the Hurt Business was fuck.
I don't know. I still think we're getting a swerve. I think Mastermind MVP is going to bring it's all to get McIntyre's guard down.
Hopefully so. Because a lot of people are pissed off that they disbanded the Hurt Business.
That might just be wishful me just hoping that they're not that stupid because they've left 2 years of good business with the Hurt Table. And I don't mean just business in the ring. I mean making money business.
Yeah, no, that's right. And, well, if we've learned anything in the last few years, that we're probably right. It's not going to happen. But, yeah, it is wishful thinking right now. And maybe it will. You never know. Vince does like to swerve things at WrestleMania. But we'll see when it comes up this weekend. Guys, thank you for being here. I really appreciate it. Always good to see you, Paz and Rick and Carl. I'd love to do more stuff with you, man. I like the Canadian accent. I'm a fan for the Canadians, eh? But no, it was good to meet you. Good to have you on the show for the first time, and we'll definitely have to do something together in the future because
you
definitely knows your wrestling. So I do appreciate it. I'll start off with you if you want to plug everything you got going on. Where can we find on social media? And tell everybody about Turnbuckle Talk.
Thank you. I appreciate that very much. Such kind words. Thank you. Turnbuckle Talk, we are found at TB Talk Pod on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Normally, we're posting a lot to our Facebook and Instagram page. And if you want, you can check out Turnbuckle Talk Mondays at 3 p.m. live on Facebook and YouTube. There is a YouTube channel as well. That's where all the live streams go, but that's where you find us at TB Talk Pod, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
And I will definitely check that out again because, number one, I actually wanted to be a Canadian as a kid. I've never told the story in public before. I actually had family.
I wouldn't start now.
All right, Paz. No, growing up as a kid, actually, my cousin had family in New Brunswick. So we'd go up to Moncton, and they actually lived in Shediac. So we'd visit them every other summer. And I fell completely in love with Canadian culture and all that. So I had a love for the Great White North.
Nice.
Mr. Paz, in all your 75,000 shows that you're doing right now, including all your Patreons, I will give you the next 15 minutes if you want to plug everything that you got going on.
We'll just make it short and sweet. We'll make it easier. At Two Man Power Trip on Twitter and Instagram. You can check out my website, tmptempire.com, and, of course, Patreon, patreon.com/tmptempire. All the stuff is on there, all the shows. You're right, it is getting creeping towards 15, so I don't want to go too long. But check it out. It's all on the website and on social media.
I don't even know when you find time to sleep with all the stuff that you have going on, but you're always chipper and you're always in a great mood. And I think we all want to be like Paz. Can we all agree on that?
Positively.
You're crazy.
I see what you did there. RBV, again, you're also the workhorse of HM. Well, we all are, but I mean, you put in the time as well. Let everybody know where to find you and all the projects that you have going on, kind sir.
Well, I guess of this airing, we're going Monday, correct? It should be out there for release. It is the Monday Locker Room, where you can listen to myself, Ben Hameen, the good doctor, Ted McNaylor. We always got some incredible guests. You never know who from OVW or from around the world of professional wrestling is going to do a run-in with us. That's Mondays at the Hameen Media Group. Also catch me on the Hitting the Marks podcast, where we're not necessarily talking pro wrestling, but we're talking life in general, all the headlines and happenings. The stories that the manipulated media doesn't want you to know about. We're giving you the facts and the stats to get you going through your week there. But you keep up with me personally across all social media. Back to the Hameen Media Group. I'm hoping we're fighting the power. We're fighting the censorship. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've got hackerhameen.podbean.com. We've got the Hameen Media Group. podbeam.com. If those happen to be down, you'll find us on YouTube. Just give us a search for our different channels over there. We're just going to try to keep bringing you all the incredible content that we can, and we're going to find an outlet. We're not going to let them hold us down.
Yeah, this couldn't happen at a worse time for Rad Mania to be released with all my 7 shows. I am releasing them on my own feed, the Rad Rob Radio Network, but I'll also be putting them up to Podbean. Hopefully the channel will be up as you're listening to this. Maybe not, we're not sure. But the video version of these shows this week will also be on the Hameen Media Group, the secondary YouTube channel, so definitely check that out. YouTube.com/Hameen Media Group. Obviously, Hacker Hameen on YouTube is for the main shows: Monday Locker Room, Wednesday Locker Room, Friday Locker Room, Light the Fuse. Rip Rogers? We got all the shows here on YouTube as well.
We've got it all covered. We got the FR podcast. We've got all the locker rooms, the review shows, the Impact Attack, the Smack Attack, the Light the Fuse. You name it, we have got it covered. Don't forget, hey, about our brand management. You know, we'll represent names. We got the Two Man Power Trip on board. We've got Stevie Ray. We've got the Russo brand, the beautiful people, Goldilocks, Big Vito. We got the A Show. We just continue to grow, and we're just rocking and rolling and taking over.
And we're also thankful for all your support too, because we couldn't do it without our watchers and our listeners and all the great fans of everybody. That's just this nice big synergy we have between the Russo brand, the Two Man Power Trip, and HMG. Everybody involved, a very good team. All the right players are in place, and we do keep continuing to grow. Literally every single day. I mean, you never know when something new is going to pop up. Ben's kayfabing everything, but he's got a lot of big projects coming up here as well. There's more to come that we're going to bring you this year on HMG and Hacker Hameen. You guys can follow me on Twitter at RadRobGaming. Check me out on Twitch. I'm a Twitch gaming streamer. I stream every Tuesday night at 6 p.m. Central, every Saturday night at 6 p.m. Central. It is twitch.tv/RadRobGaming. I also have a YouTube gaming channel called RadRobGaming. If you want to follow the show on Twitter, we are at RadTurtlesPOD. Tomorrow we got Big JB from HMG. We're talking ending the Undertaker's streak at WrestleMania 30. He was live in attendance. He will let you guys know what it was like to be there in the crowd and how he felt when Brock Lesnar became the 1-21-1. We'll also talk a little bit about other WrestleManias that JB and myself went to. So again, this week is all about WrestleMania. 7 days of shows leading up until this weekend's Too Big for Just One Night again. Night 1 and 2, Saturday and Sunday of WrestleMania. Christ, what are we up to now? 37, is it? 38, somewhere around there. 36 and a half. I don't know whether.
37.
Thanks, Boz. I knew somebody knew that. So thanks for all the support, guys. We'll see you right back here tomorrow on HMG.
Thanks again for listening to this episode. You can follow RTW on Twitter at RadTurtlesPod. And you can email the show at RadTurtlesWrestling@gmail.com. We appreciate all of your support. You've been listening to RTW Rewind.